Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We're the place you come to get under the hood of complex topics, slice through the noise, and really get the essential insights delivered straight to you.
Yeah, we try to cut through it all.
Exactly. And today we've got a really remarkable story. It's unfolding right now in the super fast-paced world of fintech.
Mm-hmm.
It's a story about a company going through what you can only really call a dramatic financial transformation. I mean, achieving profitability where so many others in their sector have just struggled.
It's true. It's a tough space.
It really feels like a Phoenix Rising moment, you know, carving out this distinct identity in what is a very crowded, fiercely competitive market.
Absolutely.
So our deep dive today is into Sezzle Inc. You'll find them on NASDAQ under the ticker SEZL.
SEZL.
Right. And this isn't just, you know, another financial services firm we're talking about. It's a really fascinating player in the buy now, pay later or BNPL sector.
That space that's blown up recently.
Totally. And what's interesting is Sezzle has this very explicit mission. They're navigating this high-stakes competitive landscape that, frankly, just keeps getting more intense. It seems like every day there's a new headline.
Yeah, the pressure is definitely on.
So our mission today is pretty clear. We've got our hands on a comprehensive fundamental analysis report on Sezzle, plus a stack of other relevant sources, and we're going to pull out the most important nuggets of knowledge for you.
The key takeaways.
Exactly. Think of this as your shortcut. Your way to understand Sezzle's unique business model, its current financial health, which is quite the story the dynamic industry it operates in, and of course the big risks and the compelling opportunities ahead.
Both sides of the coin.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're going to dissect that core investment narrative. We'll look at the bullish enthusiasm that's, well, pushed its stock way up, and also the very real bearish concerns that are still kind of lurking in the background.
Well, what's truly fascinating here, right from the get-go, is how Sezzle has very deliberately positioned itself. It's not just another payment provider. They frame themselves very explicitly as a purpose-driven platform. Their stated goal, you know, financially empowering the next generation, that gives them a pretty unique angle in a space that often feels purely transactional.
That's a good point. Transactional versus purpose-driven.
Exactly. It speaks to a specific slice of the market that's looking for more than just, you know, a convenient way to pay. They seem to want a partner in their financial journey.
Okay, let's unpack this company then. What exactly is Sezzle Inc. at its core? What's its driving identity?
Let's get into it.
When you start digging into Sezzle, you immediately hit this stated mission to financially empower the next generation.
You see it everywhere in the materials.
And it's not just like a catchy marketing slogan, mm-hmm. right? It seems genuinely embedded in their legal setup, their operational DNA. Sezzle is actually incorporated as a public benefit corporation, a PBC, under Delaware law.
Which is significant.
It is. For you, the listener, what that means is they are legally bound to balance shareholder profits, making money, with the well-being of all their stakeholders. That includes consumers, merchants, employees, the wider community.
It's a formal commitment, not just talk.
Right. It goes beyond just maximizing returns for shareholders. And here's a really crucial differentiator, something that truly sets them apart in the BNPL world.
Okay.
Sezzle is the only BNPL provider in North America, the only one that holds a certified B Corporation status.
B Corp. That's a high bar.
It really is. If you're not familiar with B Corp certification, it's this rigorous third-party standard. Yeah. It verifies a company meets really high standards of social and environmental performance, accountability, and transparency. It's not easy to get.
No, it involves a deep dive into their practices.
Exactly. And this certification isn't just some badge they slap on their website. It really solidifies that purpose-driven approach, and it seems to resonate powerfully with their target demographic.
Which is key. Who are they talking to?
Primarily younger consumers. We're talking Gen Z and millennials. Plus, what they cleverly call prime-to-be individuals.
Prime-to-be, explain that.
These are people who might have limited or maybe even, no, traditional credit history, often because, you know, they're just starting out in their financial lives, or maybe they're actively trying to avoid the pitfalls and, let's face it, the complexities of traditional credit cards.
The debt cycle, the hidden fees.
Exactly. So for this demographic, BNPL, especially Sezzle's version, offers this refreshingly transparent, flexible alternative. No hidden fees, no compounding interest like a typical credit card. It's about simplicity and control, which seems to appeal deeply to this generation.
Well, the strategic brilliance there, weaving a social mission directly into a core payment solution. especially when you're targeting that specific, often credit-averse demographic like Gen Z and millennials.
Yeah.
You really can't overstate that.
That's pretty smart.
Younger consumers are increasingly values-driven, right? They want to align their spending with companies that reflect their beliefs. So Sezzle isn't just offering a transaction.
No.
They're offering, or at least framing it as, a pathway to financial wellness.
Right.
To credit building. That's a tangible benefit that aligns perfectly with their mission. It's a clear attempt to build brand loyalty that goes way beyond just the utility of the service.
Like tapping into a deeper need.
Exactly. It taps into that deeper psychological need for financial agency, for feeling in control.
That's a powerful point, that need for agency. So, okay, diving deeper into their actual offerings, what does Sezzle actually provide? What's in their product suite?
The nuts and bolts.
Right. Their flagship product, the absolute core of their business, is the pay-in-four offering.
The classic BNPL model.
Pretty much. It's exactly what it sounds like. You split a purchase into four equal payments. They're interest-free, spread over a six-week period.
6 weeks, okay.
Yeah, the first payment is usually due right when you make the purchase, and then the other three are automatically debited every 2 weeks. It's designed to be super straightforward, completely transparent, a direct counter, really, to the often confusing terms you get with revolving credit.
Like a modern layaway? But you get the stuff now.
Exactly. You get your sneakers right away. You don't have to wait 6 weeks. But Sezzle has some key differentiators that make them stand out from the crowd.
Okay, this is important. What are they?
Perhaps the most significant one is called Sezzle Up.
Sezzle Up. Heard of it.
Yeah, it's an opt-in service. Users can choose, they have to actively choose to have their on-time payments reported to the major credit bureaus.
Ah, so it actually impacts your credit score.
Potentially, yes, in a positive way if you pay on time. Imagine this. You're just using a BNPL service, right? Making your payments responsibly on time. And by doing that, you're actively building or maybe improving your credit score.
That's huge for their target market.
Totally. It transforms Sezzle from just a payment method into a genuine tool for financial advancement. It directly supports that mission of empowering the next generation. It's a really powerful incentive for that younger credit building demographic. It's almost like a financial level up system for users, you know?
Yeah, gamifying credit building in a way.
Kind of. Now, you might be thinking, if the core pay-in-four service is interest-free for consumers, how does Sezzle actually make money beyond just charging the merchants?
Right. Where's the revenue coming to?
And why would a company offer a seemingly free service and then also charge for subscriptions? It's a great question, and it points to their multi-pronged monetization strategy.
Diversification.
Exactly. Beyond the core product, they've innovated with subscription and on-demand products, things like Sezzle Premium and Sezzle Anywhere.
Premium services.
Right. These are subscription-based virtual cards that basically grant users access to a much broader network of merchants, including ones that aren't directly integrated with Sezzle.
So you can use Sezzle almost anywhere.
Pretty much. It significantly expands where you can use their service, almost turning Sezzle into a more universal payment option. They track the adoption of these premium services through a key metric they call monthly on-demand and subscribers, or MOB.
Money, yes.
And that stood at 658,000 for the 12 months ending in Q1 2025. These recurring high-margin revenue streams from subscriptions are absolutely crucial for their long-term strategy. They build predictable income.
Predictability is gold in finance.
Definitely. And they aren't stopping there. They've recently introduced Pay in 5, which is an 8-week payment plan, offering even more flexibility.
Maybe a longer term.
Slightly longer, yeah. There's also Sezzle Balance, which basically functions as a digital wallet for simplified repayments, and MoneyIQ, which is a financial literacy platform designed to further educate their users.
Adding value beyond just the payment.
Right. These innovations clearly show they're in continuous development mode. They're moving towards becoming a more comprehensive financial toolkit for their target audience,
right,
aiming to increase utility and stickiness, keep people in their ecosystem.
Well, that diversification of revenue streams, and specifically the strategic shift towards subscriptions and direct consumer fees through partnerships, that fundamentally improves Sezzle's unit economics.
Explain unit economics here.
Basically, how much profit they make per user or per transaction. Historically, BNPL providers relied really heavily on merchant discount rates, the fees merchants pay.
Right. The merchant takes the hit.
But those rates are constantly under competitive pressure. Everyone's trying to undercut everyone else. By adding predictable, high-margin subscription revenue And those direct consumer fees, which they enabled through their web bank partnership, Sezzle, has significantly reduced its reliance on those potentially volatile merchant fees.
So they're less exposed if merchant fees get squeezed.
Exactly. This pivot is a critical factor in their recent path to profitability. It creates a more stable, more durable financial foundation for the business per transaction. It makes each user potentially more valuable over time.
That re-engineering of the business model you mentioned, making them inherently more profitable per transaction, that really feels like the game changer here, doesn't it?
It seems to be.
And it ties directly into who they're serving, these Gen Z and millennials, who seem to be responding positively. Just to reiterate, they're really honing in on that specific demographic, those prime-to-be consumers, and it's clearly working for them.
The numbers suggest so.
They've managed to achieve those improved unit economics, leading to profitability, even as they scale up their operations significantly. They currently boast 2.7 million active consumers over the last 12 months.
2.7 million, that's substantial.
And they've processed a whopping $2.9 billion in gross merchandise volume, or GMV, in that same period.
Wow, $2.9 billion flowing through.
Yeah. This indicates both strong user engagement and a substantial volume of transactions flowing through their platform. It's not just a niche player anymore in terms of volume.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, I think. Sezzle operates in a market that has just been absolutely exploding over the last few years.
Yeah.
The buy now, pay later battleground.
Oh, yeah. The Wild West sometimes.
Yeah.
What does that landscape look like from a macro perspective? And how does a company like Sezzle fit in amidst all these giants? It's a truly dynamic environment.
It really is.
First, let's just talk about the sheer scale and growth we're seeing. The U.S. BNPL market alone. It's projected to skyrocket from about $1.6 billion in 2022 to an incredible $9.2 billion by 2030.
That's massive growth. What's the CAGR on that?
It's a compound annual growth rate of 24.3%, just phenomenal growth.
Wow.
And globally, the opportunity is even larger. Estimates suggest the market could expand from around $37 billion in 2024 to nearly $168 billion by 2032. That's a 20.7% CAGR globally.
Jaw-dropping numbers.
Right. Some analyses even suggest global GMV could hit $349 billion this year in 2024 alone. It's just mind-boggling what's driving this.
It's a perfect storm, really.
It seems like it. It's a powerful combo of that structural shift towards e-commerce, where BNPL has basically become a standard expected checkout feature now.
Table stakes, almost.
Pretty much. And a significant consumer preference for more flexible, transparent payment options. Especially, as we said, from younger demographics who are just inherently skeptical of traditional credit models and the debt that can come with them.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this explosive growth really reflects a fundamental behavioral shift, right? Away from traditional credit, consumers are actively seeking alternatives. They're looking for budgeting tools that don't involve revolving debt or confusing interest calculations.
Transparency is key.
It is. It's a reflection of a generation that grew up online, expects transparency, and really prioritizes financial control. But what happens when an industry grows that fast and with relatively little regulation in its early stages?
Yeah, what happens?
Well, it almost inevitably attracts a lot of attention and sometimes unwanted scrutiny from regulators, the classic pattern we see in rapidly evolving financial technologies.
Absolutely. And that heightened scrutiny brings us directly to the key industry trends and maybe more importantly, the headwinds.
The challenges.
Right. Beyond that deep e-commerce integration and the generational shift, we're also seeing how economic conditions can, kind of paradoxically, act as a catalyst for BNPL adoption.
How so?
Well, when there's economic uncertainty or high inflation like we've seen, the ability to spread payments interest-free becomes a really vital budgeting tool, a coping mechanism for consumers trying to manage their expenses.
Makes sense. Stretching the dollar.
Exactly. It's a way to maintain purchasing power without taking on traditional debt. We're also seeing BNPL expand beyond its traditional roots in like retail and fashion into new areas. Think healthcare, travel, even B2B transactions.
Which massively expands the potential market.
Hugely. But this hypergrowth has definitely brought significant headwinds, particularly on the regulatory front. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the CFPB.
Yeah, they're watching closely.
They are now actively monitoring the BNPL industry with a very keen eye. They're focused on consumer protection, ensuring transparency in terms, setting up clear dispute resolution processes, and really scrutinizing data collection practices.
What are they collecting? How are they using it?
Exactly. This increased scrutiny is a very real, significant risk factor for all players in this space. It could lead to new compliance burdens or even restrictions on certain business models.
Higher costs, maybe lower revenue per user.
Could be. We're also seeing these emerging consumer risks. Concerns about rising late payments, the practice of stacking loans, you know, taking out multiple BNPL loans from different providers.
Leading to over-indebtedness.
Precisely. And a growing number of users actually regretting their BNPL usage once they realize the full implications, maybe how quickly those small payments add up.
It's not free money, obviously.
Not at all. So I have to ask you, thinking about your own experiences, maybe things you've seen or heard, have you seen or perhaps even experienced these regulatory changes or consumer risks kind of manifesting in the BNPL space yourself? It feels like it touches a lot of people these days, myself included.
That's a powerful question because it really brings the abstract down to earth. Personally, I've definitely noticed more people asking about, say, their credit scores after using BNPL.
Interesting.
And some express genuine confusion about late fees or how multiple small loans can suddenly feel like a big burden. It highlights exactly why the CFPB is stepping in, looking for more clarity, more consistency.
Makes sense.
But beyond those individual experiences, this market dynamic also raises a critical strategic question. In a market that is rapidly consolidating around these global giants, how does a smaller player like Sezzle not just differentiate, but actually survive and truly thrive?
Yeah, how do they compete long term?
The competitive intensity has just escalated dramatically. The market's becoming increasingly saturated. A few dominant players, the top five, collectively hold something like 52% market share.
Over half the market.
Yeah. And the barriers to entry, while they might seem low on the surface,
yeah,
the tech isn't super complex. They're actually quite high when you consider the need for massive scale.
Scale matters.
It does. You need significant capital just to fund the receivables, the money you're lending out. And there's the immense challenge of building that robust two-sided network, attracting both merchants and consumers. These are enormous undertakings that inherently favor the large incumbents with deep pockets in existing networks.
That's a crucial point, scale. And when you look at the market share landscape, it really bears that out. Sezzle holds about 8.8% of U.S. BNPL consumers. That puts it in seventh place.
Seventh. So not tiny, but not dominant.
Not dominant at all compared to the heavyweights. You've got PayPal, with its Pay in 4 product, holding a whopping 68.1% of users.
Wow, leveraging their existing base.
Totally. Then, Afterpay, now part of Block, at 25.9%, Affirm with 21.9%, and Klarna, a big European player, at 21.5% in the U.S. These are the absolute dominant forces operating at a completely different magnitude.
Different leagues, really.
Let's do a quick comparison against some of these key competitors, just to understand the landscape better. Affirm, for instance, they offer a broader range of credit products, right? Not just Pay in 4.
Right. Longer-term loans. Interest-bearing sometimes.
Exactly. They do longer-term interest-bearing loans that can go up to $30,000. It makes them more like a traditional lender in some ways. And they have massive partnerships with giants like Amazon and Shopify. Unparalleled reach.
Huge distribution advantage.
Then you have Klarna. Global leader by GMV, massive international footprint. And they have the comprehensive all-in-one shopping app that goes way beyond just payments. It's like a whole shopping ecosystem.
Trying to own the whole journey.
Right. Afterpay, now integrated into Block's ecosystem, think Square point-of-sale systems for physical stores, and the Cash App for direct consumer engagement. Incredible synergies within that massive financial network.
Yeah, Block's integration is powerful.
And of course, PayPal. Just sheer existing scale, pre-existing global user base of hundreds of millions, unparalleled distribution for its Pay in 4 product, it's immediately accessible to almost anyone already online.
Hard to compete with that reach.
So, given these formidable competitors, how on earth does Sezzle differentiate itself? Their strategy seems to be a very focused one, a strategy of depth over breadth.
Depth over breadth, okay.
They target a really clear niche, small and medium-sized e-commerce businesses, primarily, and more specifically, those younger, credit-averse consumers who are actively seeking to build their financial standing.
Back to the mission.
Back to the mission. Their purpose-driven branding, particularly that B Corp certification and the financially empower message, it really seems to resonate with this demographic. It's not just marketing. marketing. It feels like a core value proposition.
And sizzle up.
As we discussed, that credit building feature is arguably their most critical differentiator. It truly transforms a payment tool into a financial advancement tool, helps users establish or improve their credit profile, a massive value proposition for their target market.
Solves a real pain point for them.
Exactly. They also emphasize ethical and transparent lending practices. For example, offering one free payment reschedule per order. It demonstrates a more consumer-friendly approach compared to maybe some others.
Building trust.
Trying to. But of course, they have competitive vulnerabilities. You can't ignore them. They are at a clear disadvantage in terms of scale and capital compared to these rivals.
Massively outgunned financially.
Right. And this isn't just about having bigger balance sheets. It fundamentally limits Sezzle's competitive playbook. They can't just outspend PayPal on marketing or lock in Amazon-level exclusive partnerships.
That could be smarter, more focused.
Exactly. It forces them to be incredibly nimble, focusing on that niche dominance and delivering a superior product experience.
Yeah.
But it also means their long-term survival kind of hinges on constantly out-innovating and fostering unparalleled loyalty. That's a much tougher battle to win than just having the biggest budget.
It's a high-wire act.
It is. Their merchant network is also smaller. Around 47,000 merchants compared to, say, Afterpay's 63,000 retailers. That means less ubiquity, fewer options for consumers at the point of sale.
Limits where you can actually use it.
So to summarize Sezzle's strategy, it's truly depth over breadth. They're not trying to be everywhere for everyone. They can't compete on sheer size. Instead, they're attempting to build this durable moat around a specific underserved consumer segment by offering unique value, fostering loyalty through their mission, and those credit-building features.
A focused niche play.
It's a high-wire act, like you said, but one they've actually been executing surprisingly well, especially recently.
Which brings us to the financials.
Exactly. So what does this all mean for Sezzle's bottom line? The report highlights a truly compelling story here. A dramatic financial turnaround.
Yeah, this is where it gets impressive.
Historically, Sezzle incurred significant net losses. We're talking $75.2 million loss in 2021, $38.1 million loss in 2022. Big numbers.
Bleeding cash.
Right. But then something remarkable happened, something that fundamentally shifted the narrative. They achieved full-year GAAP profitability in 2023, reported $7.1 million in net income.
From a $38 million loss to a $7 million profit? Huge swing.
Huge. And the acceleration didn't stop there. Their net income soared more than tenfold to $78.5 million in fiscal year 2024.
Tenfold increase.
And get this, just in the first quarter of 2025 alone, they posted an impressive $36.2 million in net income.
Wow. Nearly half their prior year profit in one quarter.
Exactly. It signals this acceleration that Wall Street simply couldn't ignore. This is really a true Phoenix rising story in the fintech landscape.
It really is.
And this turnaround isn't just about aggressive cost cutting, although they certainly did. That executed over $70 million in annualized cost reduction.
Which helped, no doubt.
Oh, for sure. But their revenue growth has also been explosive. It's a testament to their scaling model. From about $115 million in 2021, they grew to $271 million in 2024. That's a staggering 70% year-over-year growth.
Incredible top-line growth.
And again, Q1 2025 continued that momentum. Revenue grew an astonishing 123% year-over-year to almost $105 million.
Just accelerating.
And gross merchandise volume, the GMV, has also re-accelerated, reached $2.9 billion over the last 12 months. Q1 2025 GMV was up 64% year-over-year to over $800 million.
The more people using it, spending more money through it, and they're making more profit.
That's the trifecta. These aren't just numbers. They reflect a business model that is rapidly gaining traction and really executing on its growth strategy.
And that turnaround, as you rightly point out, it was a multifaceted effort. It wasn't solely about aggressive cost cutting, though those $70 million plus reductions were certainly impactful.
Right.
More critically, it involved that fundamental improvement in their unit economics we talked about earlier.
Making more per transaction.
Exactly. Achieved through strategic revenue enhancements, particularly that WebBank partnership that standardized fees and allowed them to charge consumers directly for certain things.
Like expedited payments or rescheduling.
Right. And the successful rollout of those higher margin subscription services like Sezzle Premium. It's a complete re-engineering of the business model to be inherently more profitable per transaction. This isn't just cutting the fat, it's building a stronger, leaner engine.
That's a crucial distinction. And a key metric that really embodies this improvement is the take rate.
Take rate. Good one.
For those unfamiliar, the take rate is simply their revenue divided by their GMV. It shows how much revenue Sezzle generates for every dollar of merchandise volume processed through its platform.
How efficiently they monetize the flow.
Precisely. And this rate has steadily improved, reaching a new high of 13.0% in Q1 2025.
13%. That's quite high for this space.
It is. It demonstrates their increasing efficiency in monetizing that transaction volume, and it links directly back to that WebBank partnership and the strategic growth of their higher margin subscription services. It means they're not just processing more volume, they're getting more profitable from each dollar of that volume.
Squeezing more value out.
In a good way, for them. Of course, in any lending business, managing credit risk is paramount, especially when you're serving a demographic that might be, you know, primed to be
the risk factor.
Right. Sezzle has been very transparent about this. Management is guiding for credit losses to be between 2.5% and 3.0% of GMV for fiscal year 2025.
Which sounds reasonable for the demographic.
It seems in line. In Q1 2025, their provision for credit losses, the money they set aside, represented 12.6% of their revenue. Now, that number might seem high on its own.
Yeah, 12.6% of revenue sounds like a lot.
It does, but it's a necessary operational adjustment reflecting their aggressive GMV growth and their robust underwriting strategy. Crucially, when we look at their actual loss rates, they seem to be performing comparably or maybe even slightly better than some of the largest BNPL players from a few years ago.
So the underwriting is holding up.
It seems so. For instance, the top five BNPL lenders had an average charge-off rate of around 2.4% back in 2021. Sezzle's guidance is in that ballpark. It suggests their sophisticated AI-driven underwriting, while constantly adapting, is proving effective even as they scale into their target demographic.
That's key. The AI has to work.
Absolutely. And finally, on the financial front, we're seeing strong operating leverage.
Oh, the magic of scalability.
Exactly. It's a hallmark of a scalable platform business. It shows that as their revenues soar, their operating expenses are growing at a much slower rate.
Meaning profit margins expand.
Precisely. As a percentage of revenue, operating expenses have fallen significantly. They went from 86.1% in FY23 down to 69.7% in FY24.
That's a huge drop, over 16 percentage points.
It's a remarkable improvement. It directly contributes to their expanding operating income margin and truly proves their scalability. It means more of every new dollar of revenue is dropping straight to the bottom line. That's a powerful signal for investors.
Very powerful. Shows the model works at scale.
So with profitability now firmly established, the burning question is, what's next for Sezzle? Where do they go from here? And what are the major hurdles they'll need to overcome to maintain this really impressive momentum? It feels like a critical juncture.
Yeah, phase two, maybe consolidate and grow.
Right. Their growth opportunities seem centered on several strategic initiatives. First, product diversification and innovation. They're deliberately expanding beyond just pay in four to become this more comprehensive financial toolkit.
More reasons to stay in the app.
Exactly. We mentioned pay in five, Sezzle Balance, Money IQ. These are all designed to increase the platform's utility and stickiness, right? Ultimately enhancing the lifetime value, the LTV of their customers. They're also adding practical shopping features like price comparison tools and auto couponing within their app.
Oh, interesting. Value adds for shoppers.
Yeah, providing immediate value to their budget-conscious users, making Sezzle maybe a go-to shopping companion, not just a checkout option you click sometimes.
Deepening the relationship.
Second big area, merchant acquisition and vertical expansion. While they successfully started with those small and medium-sized e-commerce businesses, a key goal now is clearly to attract larger enterprise merchants.
Moving up market.
Definitely. Recent partnerships with significant brands like Scheels, the big sporting goods retailer, and WHOP, they demonstrate this strategic shift. This is crucial for boosting GMV and enhancing brand credibility.
Bigger names attract more users too.
For sure. They're also aggressively pushing into new verticals where BNPL is still relatively nascent.
Right.
We mentioned healthcare, automotive, even grocery. Imagine being able to spread the cost of a large unexpected medical bill or even your weekly groceries over a few weeks interest-free.
That could dramatically expand the TAM, the total addressable market.
Hugely. Beyond just discretionary spending like fashion and electronics. Third area, geographic expansion. Currently, they're really focused on North America, the U.S., and Canada.
Right. They pulled back from other markets.
They did. It was a deliberate, focused strategy after they wisely exited other international markets back in 2022 that helped rationalize their cost structure and achieve profitability. So, while future international expansion probably remains a long-term lever...
Once they've conquered North America.
Pretty much. The immediate priority seems to be deepening penetration in their core markets, building density and market share where they already have established footing.
Makes sense. Focus resources.
And underpinning a lot of this growth strategy is that WebBank partnership we keep mentioning.
Yeah. Explain why that's so important.
It's really a strategic cornerstone. It allows Sezzle to navigate the complex, fragmented U.S. regulatory environment much more efficiently and scale effectively.
How does it help with regulation?
By having WebBank, which is a state-chartered bank, originate the loans, Sezzle functions primarily as a technology platform, not the direct lender in every state. This simplifies compliance immensely because WebBank can export its home state's lending authority nationwide.
Avoiding state-by-state licensing nightmares.
Exactly. Which is a huge burden for fintechs. This also leads to significant operational efficiency by standardizing fees across states. And critically, it maintains a capital-light model for Sezzle.
Capital-light.
Meaning Sezzle doesn't have to hold massive amounts of capital on its own balance sheet to fund all those receivables, all the money lent out. WebBank handles much of that funding aspect through the facility. It significantly reduces the balance sheet risk Sezzle carries directly.
That's a very smart, almost elegant way to manage growth in a highly regulated and capital-intensive industry. Shifts some risk and complexity.
It certainly sounds smart. It shields them from some of that direct regulatory burden and frees up their capital. But does this WebBank partnership also create any dependencies or limitations for Sezzle?
That's the flip side.
Right. Like, what happens if WebBank decides to change its terms? Or what if they decide to partner with one of Sezzle's direct competitors? It seems like it could be a single point of failure, potentially.
That's a completely valid concern, and it's something any astute observer would definitely consider. While it grants significant advantages, yes, it absolutely introduces a dependency.
Okay.
Now, Sezzle mitigates this by fostering what seems to be a strong long-term relationship. Typically, these kinds of partnerships are structured with multi-year agreements, clear terms that protect both parties. However, should a partner like WebBank alter terms significantly or maybe face their own regulatory pressures, it could certainly impact Sezzle.
Right, ripple effects.
Absolutely. That's why diversifying revenue streams beyond just the core WebBank-driven product, like through those subscriptions and direct merchant fees, is also really critical for them. It provides a buffer. It's a strategic balance they have to maintain.
That makes a lot of sense, building in those redundancies where they can. So, okay, looking at their capital allocation and financial management now, their balance sheet and liquidity look strong. As of Q1 2025, they reported a robust $88.9 million in cash, plus another $32 million in restricted cash.
Healthy cash position.
Yeah, provides significant operational flexibility, a cushion against unforeseen events. Their capital structure is described by the company as prudent, simple, and sustainable. They rely on a $150 million revolving credit facility, but only about $71 million of that was actually drawn as of March 2025.
So substantial untapped liquidity available. Room to maneuver.
Exactly. And their current ratio, a measure of short-term liquidity, was 2.62. That indicates a very healthy ability to meet their short-term obligations.
Really funny.
With this newfound profitability and strong cash position, their capital allocation priorities have broadened out a bit. While funding core growth, you know, those notes, receivable, and strategic investments in tech and product remain paramount, they're also now in a position to return capital to shareholders.
A sign of maturity.
It really is. In a significant signal of that financial maturity and confidence in their future cash flows, Sezzle's board authorized a $50 million share repurchase program back in March 2025.
$50 million buyback. That's meaningful.
It is. So, what does authorizing a share repurchase program tell you, our listener, about management's confidence in their own company?
It's a strong signal.
It really is a strong statement. It suggests that management believes the stock is undervalued at current prices, right? And that they have plenty of cash flow to support both continued internal growth and provide shareholder returns. It's management essentially putting their money where their mouth is, buying back their own stock.
Shows conviction in the future.
And their management team's track record on capital deployment recently has been quite strong. They successfully executed that huge turnaround we talked about, implementing the necessary cost-cutting and strategic shifts while simultaneously driving that explosive revenue growth.
Pulled it off.
They did. They've also consistently raised their financial guidance, that practice of under-promising and over-delivering, that has likely enhanced their credibility with the investment community. It breeds confidence when a company repeatedly beats its own expectations.
Builds trust with the market.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
The risks.
Always risks. Especially here.
An investment in Sezzle, like any high-growth company in such a dynamic sector, it comes with significant risks that need to be very carefully considered. The most substantial and maybe the most unpredictable is regulatory and legal risk.
The CFPB shadow looms large.
It does. The CFPB's increased scrutiny means potential for stricter underwriting rules, maybe limits on the fees they can charge consumers, or even mandatory credit reporting for all BNPL loans, not just opt-in like Sezzle Up. Any of those could increase compliance costs and compress their margins.
Could change the economics significantly.
And there's also ongoing antitrust litigation involving Shopify, a major e-commerce platform that Sezzle integrates with. If the outcome of that lawsuit is unfavorable for platforms operating within that ecosystem, it could result in significant costs or operational restrictions for Sezzle too.
Platform risk. Another dependency.
Exactly. Credit risk and the effectiveness of their underwriting model are also critical. Their target demographic, while strategically chosen for growth potential, inherently carries a slightly higher credit risk profile than, say, a traditional prime borrower.
That's the trade-off for serving the underserved.
Right. Their dependence on those sophisticated AI-driven algorithms means any flaw in the model, or just a significant economic downturn that stresses consumers, could lead to a sharp spike in credit losses. That directly impacts their profitability. It's a constant balancing act between driving growth and managing risk.
Tightrope walk.
Then there's just the intense competitive pressure. We've talked about the giants. They're up against global players who can outspend them by orders of magnitude on marketing, secure exclusive partnership deals, engage in aggressive price competition, all of which could erode Sezzle's margins and market share over time.
Hard to fight a price war with PayPal.
Impossible, probably. Economic sensitivity is another big factor. Sezzle's performance is directly tied to consumer spending, so a broader recession or even just a significant economic slowdown likely means reduced GMV, less spending, and higher default rates on their loans.
Double whammy in a downturn.
Exactly. And finally, the standard stuff. Technology and cybersecurity risks are always present. System failures, data breaches, cyber attacks, any of those could lead to significant financial losses, severe reputational damage, and even regulatory penalties.
Basic operational risks, but amplified in fintech.
And this is where their high beta really comes into play. The report mentions a beta of 9.31.
9.31, that's incredibly high.
It is. What that tells us, for you listening, is that the market perceives Sezzle as a very high risk, high reward asset. Beta measures volatility relative to overall market. A beta over 1 means it's more volatile. 9.31 means it's way more volatile.
Right. So while that can translate to significant upside potential in strong economic times, and when the company executes flawlessly, it also implies much greater downside volatility if any of these risks we just outlined actually materialize. It's a stock that can move dramatically, very quickly, in either direction based on news or sentiment.
So, okay, how does the market value all of this potential, this incredible growth, and all this inherent risk? What does Sezzle's stock price actually tell us about its current standing and its future prospects?
The valuation question, always key.
When we look at their current valuation multiples, they've seen a dramatic expansion. It reflects significant market optimism, a real re-rating of the business after that profitability turnaround. Their price to sales, or PS ratio for the trailing 12 months, is currently hovering around 14.7x to 15.8x.
15 times sales, that's steep.
It is, and consider this, that's a huge jump from just 0.73 back in 2023.
Wow, from less than 1x sales to 15x.
Yeah.
Massive re-rating.
Massive. It indicates investors are now willing to pay dramatically more for every dollar of Sezzle sales. It signals profound confidence in its future potential and its scalability.
Pricing in a lot of future growth.
For sure. Their price-to-earnings, or PE, ratio for the trailing 12 months is somewhere between a 46x and 49x. Now, that might sound high on the surface for a financial company.
Extremely high.
But you have to consider the context. Their earnings per share increased by over 700% year over year. The growth rate was astronomical. Looking forward, their PE ratio based on analyst earnings estimates is lower, maybe around 32x, but that's still a significant premium compared to many traditional financial companies.
Still reflects high growth expectations.
And a key metric often used for the BNPL industry, enterprise value to GMV, is approximately 1.65x. Another indicator of market valuation relative to the volume of transactions they facilitate.
So what does that mean for you as a listener looking at these numbers? The market is clearly valuing Sezzle as a high-growth, scalable technology platform, not as a slow and steady traditional financial services company.
Big difference in valuation multiples there.
Huge. And this sets a very high bar for performance. When you compare their EV revenue multiple of about 14.6x to a competitor like Affirm, which is around 7.0x, it's clear Sezzle is getting a significant premium.
Why the premium over Affirm, do you think?
Well, it seems largely justified, at least for now, by its best-in-class financial performance recently. That astounding 91.7% TTM revenue growth, that impressive 137% return on equity. In a sector where many peers are still struggling with negative ROE, they're executing exceptionally well right now.
So the performance warrants it for now.
For now. However, this premium also means there's very little wiggle room in that valuation. Any misstep, any slowdown in that growth trajectory, any significant credit event, it could lead to a rapid and severe re-rating of the stock downwards. It's a high reward, but equally high risk proposition at these valuation levels. It's priced for near perfection.
That explanation of the premium and the risk makes perfect sense. Okay, let's briefly touch on management and corporate governance, vital for any investment decision.
Who's running the show?
Right. The company is led by its co-founder, Charlie Youakim. He serves as both CEO and executive chairman. He has a strong background in fintech, having founded another successful payments company before Sezzle.
Serial entrepreneur in the space.
Seems so. The broader leadership team and the board of directors also bring extensive industry experience from various sectors, which is generally a positive sign. You want that diverse expertise.
Depth on the bench.
Their corporate governance practices are quite distinct, particularly because of that public benefit corporation status and the B Corp certification we talked about.
That legal structure.
Right. That unique legal structure formally commits them to balancing profit with broader stakeholder interests. As we discussed, that's a core part of their brand identity, and it resonates with their target demographic. They also have standard board committees in place for oversight, audit and risk, compensation, nominating, and corporate governance. Important checks and balances.
Standard good governance stuff.
One point to note, though, is the combined chairman and CEO role held by Charlie Youakim, while it's common in many founder-led companies.
Especially tech companies.
True. It sometimes deviates from governance best practices that advocate for separate roles to ensure independent board leadership and oversight of the CEO. Just something to be aware of.
A potential flag, but common.
However, a very strong positive here is the insider ownership. It's exceptionally high, over 51%.
Wow. Insiders own more than half the company.
Yes. With CEO Charlie Youakim himself holding a substantial stake, approximately 14.8 million shares, this creates a very strong alignment of interests between the leadership team and public shareholders. Their incentives are clearly linked to the long-term success of the company. Their skin is definitely in the game.
That's usually seen as a major positive, alignment of interests.
Absolutely. Now, while there has been some recent insider selling noted in the report, a closer look indicates much of it appears to be part of prearranged 10b5-1 plans.
Yeah, the scheduled selling plans.
Exactly. These are essentially pre-scheduled trading programs set up well in advance by insiders. They allow them to sell shares at predetermined times or prices, often to manage personal finances, diversify holdings. And crucially, they're designed to avoid any perception of trading on non-public information.
So, not necessarily a signal of lack of confidence.
Not necessarily, or it could simply be insiders covering tax obligations from vested stock units, which is also very common. These types of sales are generally considered routine and don't typically signal a lack of confidence, but it's always something savvy investors keep an eye on just to monitor the patterns.
Prudent to watch, but often benign.
Okay, we've covered a lot today. From Sezzle's purpose-driven roots, its unique position as a B Corp in the BNPL space, to its incredible financial turnaround and the intense market it navigates. So what does this all mean for you, the listener, as you try to make sense of this exciting yet clearly complex company? Let's try to synthesize and revisit some key questions.
Yeah, let's try to tie it together. What's the bottom line on some of these big issues?
Okay, first big question. Is Sezzle's competitive position actually sustainable against those giants?
Okay. My take. Sezzle's competitive position is certainly tenuous when you look at the sheer scale of its rivals, but it is potentially sustainable if, and it's a big if, it executes its niche strategy flawlessly.
Flawless execution needed.
Absolutely. It cannot compete on scale. So its sustainability hinges on leveraging those soft moats, things like the Cecil Up credit building feature, that's authentic B Corp branding that resonates with a specific group. The ongoing risk, however, is that larger competitors could simply replicate these features, thereby neutralizing Cecil's key differentiators. That's a constant threat in the innovation game. They have to stay one step ahead.
Right. Okay, next, path to profitability and optimal scale. They've hit profitability, but what's the path forward?
Well, achieving profitability was a monumental milestone in this sector, especially given the history of losses across the industry. The path forward now is really about scaling this profitable model by deepening the penetration of their subscription services within their existing user base, getting more users onto premium, and strategically acquiring new users, and crucially, those enterprise merchants who genuinely value their differentiated offering, the mission, the B Corp status, all while maintaining that hard-won profitability amidst relentless competitive pressures. It's about smart, profitable growth, not just growth for growth's sake anymore.
Got it. Economic sensitivity, how vulnerable are they?
Highly vulnerable. The business model is indeed highly sensitive to economic downturns. This means a dual negative impact in a recession. Lower gross merchandise volume, which directly hits their revenue.
People spend less.
Exactly. And higher credit losses, which significantly impacts their profitability, particularly during recessions or periods of consumer belt tightening when their target demographic might be stressed. It's a cyclical business tied to consumer health.
Okay. Can they successfully compete long-term against the giants like PayPal, Klarna, Affirm?
Yes, I think it's possible, but it absolutely requires an asymmetric strategy. They cannot win a head-on price war or a marketing spending war.
So what's the asymmetric strategy?
It means continuing to focus relentlessly on niche dominance, continuous product innovation that genuinely adds unique value, not just copycat features, building intense brand loyalty through that unique value proposition of financial empowerment, and fostering a highly engaged, loyal user base that larger competitors find difficult or maybe too costly to pry away. They have to outthink and outmaneuver, not outspend.
Makes sense. What about key inflection points? What could really drive value creation or, conversely, destruction?
Okay, value creation inflection points. Successfully converting a much larger chunk of their user base to those higher-margin subscription services would be huge. Securing major new enterprise partnerships that significantly boost GMV and visibility, or potentially favorable regulatory outcomes, maybe even a positive resolution in that Shopify lawsuit, though that's uncertain.
And value destruction.
Value destruction could come from a severe economic downturn hitting their user base hard, draconian new regulation that fundamentally impairs their business model or economics, or maybe the biggest strategic risk, competitive encroachment, where the giants successfully replicate and neutralize their key differentiators like Cecil Up, making Cecil just another pay-in-for option.
That would commoditize them.
Exactly. Yeah. Finally, does the current valuation fairly reflect the company's growth prospects and risk profile? As we discussed, the current valuation reflects an extremely optimistic outlook. It basically prices in several years of near-perfect execution and continued hypergrowth. This leaves very little margin for safety.
No room for error.
Very little. It means the current stock price, in my view, fully captures the bull case for Cecil. It reflects all the good news and future potential. But it offers little protection against the materialization of the numerous, very real risks we've outlined today. It's a high-stakes bet, currently priced for perfection.
Okay. We've covered a massive amount today. From Cecil's purpose-driven roots, its remarkable turnaround, the intense market it operates in, and all those nuanced risks and opportunities. It's clear this is a company making some really big moves in a very dynamic industry.
Absolutely. The investment in Cecil, when you boil it down, is ultimately a bet on its unique ability to thrive in this incredibly high-stakes market.
Yeah.
A bet that it can successfully serve a specific demographic and build lasting brand loyalty through that idea of financial empowerment.
Yeah.
But it's a bet that absolutely comes with significant exposure to volatile market dynamics and regulatory shifts that are still very much evolving. It's definitely not for the faint of heart, risk-averse investor.
Yeah.
But it's certainly a compelling story to watch unfold.
Agreed. Okay, a final thought for you, our listeners, to mull over as we wrap up. Given everything you've heard today about Cecil's dual mission, this drive for financial empowerment and the need for profitability, how do you think companies can truly balance these often competing demands? How can they balance purpose-driven missions with the intense pressures of the financial markets, especially when they're facing global giants in this constantly evolving regulatory landscape? And maybe more personally, what value do you place on a company's mission when you're considering its financial health and its potential for long-term success? Something to think about.
Good questions to ponder.
Thank you so much for joining us for this deep dive today. Until next time, keep learning, keep questioning, and stay well informed.